This is our new weekly show, Chatting Art, Transport, Communications, History, the CATCH. So welcome aboard the Catchcast, and we're hoping to get you as fascinated by these geeky old subjects as myself and the guests. In this edition, we're celebrating the skills of the map designer. Why does their work matter? Why do some people get it wrong? How can they be made better? Today, we're honoured to be joined by Dr. Maxwell Roberts. Welcome to the Catchcast, Max.
Hello.
Now, you've become one of the world's foremost commentators on transit mapping, and you've made hundreds of your own diagrams. But before we answer those questions I just mentioned, I wonder if we can just sort of set the scene a bit about how you first got into maps, please, Max.
Oh, this is all down to a hobby that went a bit out of control. I've always liked maps. I remember seeing my first ever London Underground map. I was about 8 years old, and it's such a lovely, colourful, organised thing. And I found that my parents had another one in their drawer, so I had two completely different underground maps of the same network. And I was hooked. I started collecting them. Underground maps are great to collect. They're free. You can pick them up at a station, and off I went. So from then on, I just started collecting them, looking at them, admiring them, enjoying them.
How many did you end up collecting eventually? I mean, what's your collection like now?
I've got the full set now, every single sort of fold-up pocket map from the first decade of the 20th century. I've got two missing from my collection. I need to get around to filling those. But yeah, I've got a lot of maps.
And what would you say is one of your most treasured collector's items then?
It's an Italian map from 1938. Of the European rail network, and it's actually in Beck style. So it's the whole of Europe, all European railways, and they're designated by whether they're first class services, sleeper services, second class services, and it's the whole of Europe. It's a complete diagram. It's completely, I've never seen anything like that before. I found it by chance in a shop. As far as I know, it's the only one left in the world.
Wow. I've seen one a bit similar to that, that looks like Italy is easily connected with the rest of Europe. But of course, in certain parts, you have to change trains, don't you?
Yeah, and go through, well, this map was 1938, so go past some rather nasty border guards trying to decide whether you should be travelling or not.
Now, the Beck diagrams that you first fell in love with, they followed some rules, didn't they? Perhaps you could bullet point them and maybe say how early on you began questioning some of them yourself.
Okay, these the rules are to turn the whole network into simple straight lines at a restricted set of angles. So you're allowed horizontal lines, vertical lines, and 45 degree diagonal lines, all joined together with nice sort of nice round corners so it doesn't look too sharp and jagged. And it's not just the design rules that Beck used, it's how carefully he arranged the map to make sure that these lines were as straight as possible. It's easy for the eye to follow. And that's when I started noticing, after Beck stopped designing maps in the 1950s, other people took the map on and they were less, not necessarily as careful as him. Some of them were, but what I noticed was in the 1990s, the map was sort of less flowing. It had more corners. The line trajectories are more complex. About the same time, I bought a wonderful book, treated myself, Mr. Beck's Underground Map by Ken Garland, which gave the whole history of Beck's era of designing the underground map from 1933 to 1960. And what it made clear from the book was that, you know, Beck's priority was to simplify, you know, every corner on the map, every bend is potentially a mistake. You need to try and smooth them all out. And what I noticed was that that wasn't happening anymore. And that really has got me sort of thinking. There is a new underground line being proposed, the Chelsea Hackney line, and the modern, you know, fantasy map showing it had the thing bending lots of corners across central London. And that was my first starting point. I started thinking, well, couldn't we have that as a straight line like Beck would have tried to have made it? And that sort of started me off thinking about my first map.
So that was the beginning of your questioning process. And I believe you also realised that you didn't necessarily need to stick to Beck's rule of the 45 degrees, yeah. Did you?
Yeah, I started with them. So I was trying to improve the map, simplify it on the basis of using Beck's rules. But yeah, there's only so far you can go with those. You start thinking to yourself, okay, these design rules worked in 1933 when the underground map was a much simpler thing, you know, far fewer stations on it. And so I started thinking, well, maybe Beck's rules have had their day. And in fact, Beck experimented himself with different rules. And so I started thinking, right, if we want simple straight lines, let's relax the angle rule. You know, if we don't have to use horizontal, vertical, 45-degree diagonals, maybe we can just get rid of all the corners so every single line is straight. And that led to my first sort of rule-breaking underground map, which we called sort of Crazy Tube map. And that straightened everything out, but at all sorts of different angles that people found quite surprising.
So, yeah, what kind of reaction did you get to breaking the famous Beck rules?
The same reaction I get to breaking the rules every way, which is that some people love it and think this is the way forward, and other people are actually quite incensed by it. And a friend of mine, Peter Lloyd, actually called my design the devil's map. So yes, I tried other rule-breaking things as well. Another way Beck tried breaking the rules was just by getting rid of the straight lines altogether and just turning the whole thing into simple curves, not a geographical map, just a diagram map but with curves instead of straight lines. And I tried that with the modern network, and that got a different reaction. Some people still disliked it, but you know, other people were actually quite warm to this. They said it looked like a friendlier, more exciting version of the underground map. And I tried that technique for Paris, turning the whole Paris metro network, which is much more complex than London, into smooth flowing curves. And that was actually quite successful. We tried usability testing on that, and that map beat the official Paris metro map by quite a wide margin in our usability tests.
We just heard about how our guest Max Roberts became inspired by good design and some not so good design. So maybe you can talk us a bit through why you decided to actually make a book about your interest.
Okay, well, I was showing these sort of strange maps and these redesigned maps to the world, and I was lucky enough to be invited to give a presentation to the London Underground Railway Society, and in the audience was a publisher of transport books, the manager of Capital Transport Publishing, and he saw me and he said, I'm looking for someone to write a successor to Mr. Beck's underground map, and would you like to do it? And I'd not really thought about it until that point, but yes, it was a way of sort of taking what I'd learned about the maps at this early stage and putting it all together, and also meeting some of the people at TfL who were involved in the process. And so that was, after sort of a couple of years of writing, we got Underground Maps After Beck, the story of the London Underground map in the hands of Henry Beck's successors.
And so that led you on basically to the idea for the next book, which was all about rule breaking, wasn't it?
Okay, well, after I'd started sort of breaking rules, I started thinking about what makes a good map. And the subtitle of the book is Explorations in Information Design. And that really marked the point where I started going into design overdrive. I was redesigning maps in every way I could possibly think about.
Now, your first book, Underground Maps After Beck, looked at the development of the tube maps since the 1960s. But your second book, Underground Maps Unraveled, was published in 2012 and has been pretty much acclaimed as the first to properly dissect the designer's work. I wonder if you can summarise some of what the book was trying to attempt, please, Max.
What the book talks about is two aspects of design. First of all is every transport network is different. They've all got different structures. They connect in different ways. Different places are important. And what you have to do is match the design rules to the network. Every network is different, and what works for London might not work for somewhere else. So in London, we've got horizontal, vertical, 45-degree diagonals. We've got four angles. For some networks, it might be easy to get simple straight lines with three angles or six angles, or maybe like Paris, you need no angles at all, just curved lines. The second prong is what we're trying to aim for. And I've got a sort of five-factor framework for effective design. These are what designers are aiming for. Simple line trajectories. The overall design's got to be coherent. The lines have got to sort of relate to each other. They've got to be symmetrical, parallel, and so on to give the design good shape. We mustn't neglect topography. People get upset when reality gets distorted, and sometimes it makes them plan bad journeys. So we need a map that doesn't space warp London or whichever city too much. We need a design that's balanced. It mustn't be crushed up in some places, empty next door. That just sort of makes people's attention focus in the wrong places. And finally, we need a design with harmony. It's got to be visually attractive. A lot of people buy these maps to hang on their walls because they like them. And a map that is visually attractive and engaging will make people want to use it. And so Underground Maps at Unraveled explored all these criteria, London, Paris, Berlin, New York, you know, just trying to sort of get to the essence of what, you know, designers should be aiming for.
And you also did some research for that as well, didn't you, Max? You undertook some proper pioneering research of how maps are actually used by passengers.
Yes, we user testing is essential. I mean, designers have got some ideas about what makes a map good, but as we see, sometimes, you know, designers come up with maps which don't look very nice. And so, you know, objective testing is very important. So we give people tasks where we ask them to plan journeys or ask them to choose which journey they think would be fastest. We configure maps in different ways, we colour maps in different ways, and we actually measure how long it takes people to do these tasks. You know, is this map faster or is that map faster? And, you know, by identifying the maps that people can use better, you know, these are the maps which should be adopted in stations. But we don't neglect the user as well. So we always ask users to rate maps for what they think they're like, because sometimes users don't like maps which are better for them to use. And that conflict is sort of awkward, but you have to take account of the user, because if the user doesn't like the map, then they will just use computer journey planners instead and the design has failed. So it's really an exercise in balancing what works best with what the user really wants.
Do you think the transit organisations are listening to your research?
I know some which are definitely not. I mean, the trouble is that at the end of the day, objective data has to be taken. And I know big organisations who should know better, and they're just not doing that. They think you can identify the map that's best to use by running focus groups, and you just can't do that. You have to give the user tasks. You have to test them as well as finding out what they think.
Now, in this book, you also showed that Beck wasn't the first to use diagrams, didn't you?
No, I mean, that's the point, and I think that's very important. I think a lot of people think that Beck invented straight lines on maps, and he absolutely didn't. On the London Underground, they were using straight lines on train diagrams. Beck would have seen those every day of his life, and it was just be a question of putting them on top of each other to get the map. Now, what Beck did... And he didn't invent diagram maps. What he did, he designed an exceptionally fine whole network map of London at his first attempt. And, you know, it satisfied all the design criteria I talked about earlier. And that was his real achievement. He instinctively knew how to create an effective design. That's important to understand, because when you look at maps around the world, there's quite clearly designers who don't understand that. They think that straight lines make the map good, but that's certainly not what Beck's objective was. And that's why Beck's design work has been so successful.
And you were talking about straight lines, but you were one of the first people to focus on the idea of radiating circles for transit diagrams. What was the inspiration for that?
There were two inspirations for that. Yeah, one was a Paris map I saw in 2004, which had the whole Paris metro network as concentric ovals. It's a very strange looking thing, but it's something that sort of caught my eye. The second thing that happened was the London Overground loop line from Highbury and Islington to Clapham Junction and back again was completed in 2012. And a lot of people were saying, well, let's make this a circle so as to publicise the new orbital connection. And I saw the maps people were coming up with, and they had circles on the map, but they also had straight lines at standard tube map angles. And what happens when you mix design rules like that, some circles, some straight lines, is the whole thing's a bit messy. The straight lines and the circles don't naturally communicate with each other. So I've seen these maps and thinking, no, this is not a tidy approach. And if you want your straight lines and circles to communicate with each other neatly in harmony, then you need to radiate the straight lines from the centre, because then every single straight line is crossing every circle at 90 degrees. They're all perpendicular. So I put that all together. I broke the design rules in a few places because London's a very complicated network. And in 2013, I released my first Circles London Underground map.
And how was that received?
It went bananas. I'd released, you know, strange designs on the internet before, and they pick up some traction. They get in the, you know, people report on them. Some people like them, some people don't like them. But this circles map, it went completely viral. Twitter went crazy, ended up in the newspapers, interviews, people saying that this map should be adopted. I wasn't so sure about that because the way I designed that map, I was just sort of, you know, just exploring the concept, and there are things I've done on that map which go against my principles of effective design. So I was a bit sort of, I hadn't expected the map to be taken so seriously. If I had known it was going to be taken seriously, I'd have designed it in a different way. It's not as actually as usable as it should be.
Given the response to the maps you've told us about, where did you take the idea of making radical schematic maps next then, Max?
Okay, well, another sideline I do is maps which are not supposed to be usable. Mm-hmm. As my sort of interest in maps has developed, I've also become very much more interested in sort of the decorative arts of the 20th century as well. So Art Nouveau and Art Deco and various sites of modernism. And so I love exploring what ifs, and I've created several maps. I say, well, what if the underground London Underground map was designed by Charles Rennie Mackintosh? Or what if the Paris Metro map was really an Art Nouveau map, just like the station entrances? One of my best designs is Chicago L Network. Frank Lloyd Wright, the famous architect, started his work in Chicago. And so I just turned the whole Chicago L Network into a diagram map inspired by Frank Lloyd Wright. So I took his stained glass windows and used the patterns in those for all the station. It's a riot of shape and colour, and it took me several years to get it to work. But it's, you know, it was worth it. That design was very well received.
And so what did that inspire you to do? I believe you invested in some new equipment.
Yeah, releasing all these maps and people sort of saying, can I buy them? And rather than going to third-party websites, I decided, well, there's enough interest here. And I bought my own large format printer. So it's a huge thing. It's about the size of a piano, and I can print off any size of map from right down to A2 size, right up to sort of single bed sized.
Wow. Very enterprising. So the outside world seems to have been taking note of your designs. Have any of your ideas ended up being used by the official transit operators?
Yes, they have. Karlsruhe in Germany, mm-hmm. they were quite enthusiastic about using my curvilinear maps for their design. So they now produce maps of their network with all gentle curves everywhere. If you look at a map of Cologne, that city really is based on circles and spokes. You know, it's exactly the same structure as a circles map. And I designed a map of the city, and a local designer took it up and pushed it through. So based on my design, the Cologne city map is now completely circular. More recently, last year, TfL themselves, they actually created their own circles map of the underground. And that was intended to advertise mobile phones. But I got a lot of emails in my inbox saying, Max, look at the latest TfL circles map. They've been borrowing your ideas. You should complain to them. And, you know, you can't copyright ideas. But so I thought, well, I can't really complain about it. So what I'm going to do instead, I'm going to revisit my circles map from 2013. And I'm going to completely redesign it. I didn't break my design rules nearly so much. I made sure it was geographically really good. So there's no spacewalks anywhere. You look at London anywhere and the stations are where you'd expect them to be in relation to each other. And my aim was to produce something best than the TfL map, but not best than their circles map, best than their actual pocket and station poster map, which is really falling apart these days. The geography on it is terrible and the line trajectories are really complicated. It fails by every criterion of usability. So I thought, let's make my circles map better geographically than the official design. And it was possible to do that. So yes, I actually released onto the world a crazy avant-garde circles and spokes map that was actually more geographically accurate than the one that London Transport is using.
And it caused a bit of a media storm, I believe.
It went completely haywire, even more haywire than the first time round. Yeah, so I got about 18,000 likes on Twitter in the sort of a space for a few days. And I was on breakfast television and all sorts of different places. It was a whirlwind.
Oh, the red sofa of breakfast TV. Well done. While making all of these maps, you also continue to write books as well.
Yes, I did a rather nice book on airline maps with a certain person that I'm sure the audience has heard of. that was really nice. Also, I did a map on my sort of collection of unofficial underground maps. If you go to any bookshop around the world and look at tourist guides to London, you'll see rather wacky looking London underground maps that have nothing to do with the official version. So I've got a big collection of sort of all these different designers around the world in the last 100 years, all designing and publishing their own, you know, strange London underground maps.
Crikey. And on top of all of that, you also run a website, publish a newsletter on transit map design, and just recently, I believe, you organised an entire conference of map makers.
Yeah, the research is very important to me, and there's lots of different people interested in making maps better, you know, better design, computers helping people design maps. We've been organising these every sort of 3 years or so. We started off at the University of Essex, then we went to Vienna, then Germany, and now we're in Paris. So a group of us spent 2 days discussing how to make maps better, how to evaluate maps, and, you know, how to design maps, how to get computers to help people.
Was there anything that came out of that conference that you think, crikey, every transport organisation needs to have heard this?
I presented my own results on the Circles map. That was, the usability data for these maps are very interesting, and also, you know, suggesting which cities, you know, should think about using them and which cities shouldn't. Yes, we saw, you know, the latest sort of computer programs to help people. So there's ways computers can considerably speed up design, and there's some quite interesting stuff there. And there's also people talking about sort of using maps on mobile phones. You know, people like to zoom in. So, but if you zoom in on a diagram map, then, you know, how do you fit the landmarks in all around it? How do you sort of account for the fact that the more people zoom in, the more geographically accurate it needs to be?
Yeah, so if everybody's using, you know, handheld devices and apps to plan their journeys, why do maps in and of themselves matter?
I think maps are important for all sorts of reasons. Maps are very good for certain sorts of tasks, which computer apps are not very good for. You know, if I'm at Oxford Circus Station and I've got an hour to kill, you know, I can look at the map and say, well, where shall I go now to kill an hour? You know, it's very hard to get a journey planner to give you sort of sensible suggestions. Also, you know, maps teach you about where you are. I grew up with maps of London, and I use them to explore, and I know London buses, London Underground, London streets, London districts. I know them really well. And I think that's a useful skill to have, because when the batteries run out, what do people do if they've got no knowledge of the city in which they live in? I think the other thing is that people do use apps, but there's two reasons why a lot of people use apps. One is that many transport operators hide their maps, make them difficult to find. A lot of people want to use maps, but, you know, the transport people set up barriers to them using them, which isn't very inclusive. And, you know, the other thing is that, you know, where people do provide maps, they're not very good quality. TfL's quality of maps, you know, the number of maps they produce, it's really terrible state. I mean, they really don't care about maps, and they don't think they're important. And those maps they do produce are very low quality. And I think one of the reasons why my Circles map was so popular is I think people are map starved for London. You know, they want good maps, well designed, and TfL's just not supplying them. And if TfL won't do it, then other people will instead. So there's a lot of incentives for people to take mapping more seriously, transport operators, because, you know, a big chunk of people do want to use them, do like to use them to plan journeys. It gives them control, gives them freedom, means they don't have to get their device out in a crowded environment. And I think people should be catering towards those. We're supposed to be catering for all sorts of other different people, so why not cater for the people who still think maps are valuable?
And I believe you made a Circles map for the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, I had a little play the other day. The Isle of Wight's got a very good bus network. In fact, I used to travel to the Isle of Wight a lot when I was sort of growing up. I'll just get on the, just go to my local station, North Dulwich, go down to Wimbledon, get a train down to Portsmouth, catch the ferry, and spend the day travelling on ancient underground trains. It was wonderful. So yes, you can turn the Isle of Wight into a, you know, a circle with some bits sticking out on the sides, and you get quite an interesting looking bus map when you do that.
We will look out for that on your website. So next time you take a trip on public transport, be sure to look hard at the map and know that wise minds like Max Roberts may well have been looking at it a lot harder than you. Thanks to Max Roberts for that. You can find him online at tubemapcentral.com. Hope you've enjoyed listening and learning as much as I have. Next week's Couchcast is not to be missed. We will be hearing about songs about trains. Come join us then.